Yeah, Rocky Erickson right there, screaming in the background. You gotta love it. 13 Floors, You're Gonna Miss Me, Girl, and you're listening to Steel City Music with your host, Gunner. In this hour, we're gonna keep up with the tradition we've been doing earlier in the show. Play some interviews that I saw. Well, the whole thing is I enjoy watching people storytell about their own music and interviews, that sort of thing. So we're going to be doing that in this hour. We'll play some old interviews from the Lemonheads and Beach Slang, which is just a tee up to some of the songs that they're discussing in the interview. So there you go. And starting off this hour, we will do a thing with Dave Grohl, my good friend. I can say that. Why can't I say that? I mean, we've only met a handful of times, but I mean, I consider him a good friend. He doesn't ask to borrow money. So there you go. Okay, so here's the deal. On March 20th, he did this acoustic thing called the Oates Song Fest, and it was organized by John and Amy Oates to raise awareness and funds for Feeding America. So he goes on to describe the Everlong song, which was one of his biggest hits, and how it became a bigger hit after doing it acoustically, and all the other fun stuff. So here it is, plus some music.
Hi, I'm Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters, and it's an honor to be here, and I'm going to tell you the story of our song, Everlong. Everlong was written, I think, in 1996, probably in the winter of 96, when we were making our second album, The Color and the Shape. You know, if you've ever been in a studio with a band for a long period of time and you're recording multiple songs, you know, there's a lot of time just sort of sitting around waiting for something to happen. And in that time, I remember sitting in like an isolation booth, looking out at the other guys in the band, waiting in between takes to play. And it was at a studio outside of Seattle called, I think it was called Bear Creek or something like that. Kind of like this weird house and barn outside of town. So I was sitting in the isolation booth waiting to do a take of another song, and I just started playing this chord. Now, I'm not a trained musician, so I don't know what that chord is. I don't know what you would call it. I can't read music. I'm not sure. But I immediately was like, oh, that kind of sounds like Sonic Youth, is the first thing I thought. One of my favorite bands of all time, Sonic Youth. I'm like, wow, that's such a cool Sonic Youth chord. So I was kind of playing with it, and then I kind of realized, oh, well, I could do that as well. What's that chord? No clue. Don't know what it's called. Don't know anything about guitar. But I realized you could sort of move it around. And so in between takes, I would just kind of mess around with this thing, you know, strum around with it. Now, at the time, I was breaking up with a girl that I had been with for a while. So I was sort of in the middle of this intense emotional period. And for whatever reason, the emotion or the feeling I got when I would play this succession of chords sort of touched on whatever that emotion was. So we continued recording. In the meantime, my relationship ended, and I was in a very difficult place. I remember it was right around Christmas. I went back to Virginia, where I grew up, and at this point, the song had sort of evolved into. Now, also, not to get too like muso technical or whatever, because I'm not a trained guitar player, I actually look at this guitar, this instrument, like it's a drum set. So I look at the lower strings like kicks and snares, and I look at the higher strings almost as if they're cymbals. So the pattern in which I'm strumming, it's almost like a kick drum pattern, like like that. Anyway, so because of the emotional place I was in, I started writing the lyrics to this song. And they come from a real place. So the song started to come together, and I wanted to record it quickly so I didn't forget it. I had a friend named Jeff Turner in Washington, D.C., one of my old punk rock friends from the 80s. He had a studio next to this great bar called the Black Cat on 14th Street. And I said, hey, could I come in and just do a demo really quick? He said, sure. And without having it fully formed, I just kind of went in. I put down a drum track. I put down the guitars and the bass, and I sang it into a microphone for the first time. And it did seem to make sense. The lyric and the melody at the time where I was emotionally, it all made sense. And I think that that's what songs should be. They should be something that not only the tone or the melody or dynamic of the instrumental, but also the lyric match in a way that it represents how you feel at that moment. I recorded the song and I brought it back to the guys. I remember actually I played it for Thurston and Kim from Sonic Youth, because I was deathly afraid that I had just totally like ripped off the Sonic Youth song somehow. And I said, oh, listen to this thing I just recorded. And they listened. I said, listen to this demo that I did. And they said, why is that a demo? Why isn't that the album? And it just felt so off the cuff and unofficial. I considered it to be a demo. Well, we went in and we re-recorded it. And that's the song that you hear on the radio today. And, side note, I never considered doing it acoustically. I thought it was a rock song until, I think it was the first time we did the Howard Stern show. Howard Stern loved the song. And when you do the Howard Stern show, it's 6 o'clock in the morning and you don't want to touch an instrument or just get close to a microphone. But he asked that I play it acoustically. And so I did. And in a way, it gave the song a whole new rebirth. This is long after it was released, I think. But it gave the song kind of a whole new life. Because I think sometimes when I do it this way, it really does peel back a lot of the bells and whistles and the other noise when it's just the lyric and the guitar and my voice. I think it kind of makes the song feel the way I had always wished it felt. So I'll shut up now. This is a song called Everlong. I'll ever ask of you. promise not to stop when I say when. She sang.
times like these you give and give again. It's times like these you learn to love again. It's times like these, time and time again. I've got another confession to make. I'm your fool. Everyone's got the chains to break, holding you. Were you born to resist? Don't be abused. Is someone getting the best, the best, the best, the best of you? Is someone getting the best, the best, the best, the best of you? Are you dawning on to someone new? I needed somewhere to hang my head without your news. You gave me something that I didn't have, but had no use. I was too weak to give in, too strong to lose. My heart is under arrest again, but I break loose. My head is giving me life or death, but I can't choose.
Ending right there. A little bit of Foo Fighters action for you. Best of You and At Times Like These. And of course, kicking off Dave Grohl acoustically talking about Everlong and the impact of that song sort of thing. So coming up, in this next set, you're going to hear Ms. Robinson cover from the Lemonheads, My Drug Buddy, a really great song they did, a cover, Frank Mills, and also starting things off, a cover from Suzanne Vega's Luca track. I've always been a big fan of the Lemonheads, and so it's one of those go-tos back in the early 90s that I always used to listen to, so... I've dug up this interview with Evan Dando on Scottish TV from like 1993. And what I like about it is Evan in this time period is he's coherent, which is nice because later on, I mean, you know, from the drug use, that kind of stuff. And well, we always know that when a celebrity or a musical icon does an interview, sometimes it's not always in the best of circumstances. But I really enjoyed this interview, so... Evan Dando, 1993 on Scottish TV. I think that's what it is, yeah.
My name is Luca. It started with myself, Jesse Peretz, and Ben Diley. We were all in high school, around 17. And so it was, you know, we were young. We didn't know what we wanted to do. And Ben went on to, you know, really study English at school. And Jesse was going on to pursue his visual things that he liked to do, like making films. And so that's what set up the instability of the band from the beginning. Because, you know, they weren't in it for the whole long haul, really, necessarily. They didn't really want to do it. So I've found a lot of people over the years. I had, like, 12 different drummers, and I had a bunch of fill-in bass players. But now I have a stable lineup again, in Nick Dalton and David Ryan. I play what I like to, you know, I like to hear it, do the best I can. I don't have time to worry about people who like our first album and don't like our second record. I think if they don't like it, that's great. If they don't like it, there's nothing more to say about it. There's kind of a theme of loss and of disappearance of people. Like Ray, the shame about Ray is that he's disappeared and no one knows what happened to him. And then we covered the song from Hair, Frank Mills, and that's about someone who's gone too. So that's the closest thing to a theme I could find. Ray's just, it's kind of a name for anybody and everybody. And also it's just a made-up character. It just sounds good. It's a shame about Ray. It just sounds good. It's called assonance, I think, like vowel sounds. The ones I like the best take only an hour at the most to write. And the ones I like the best, like My Drug Buddy, I wrote in 20 minutes. So that's really, it's good when it comes out all at once. That's the coolest. And it seems to be the most honest and true when you look back on it, when it comes out really quickly, for some reason. Graham Parsons, Black Sabbath, Neil Young, Stooges, Hank Williams Sr., that kind of stuff. I defer responsibility about the videos to my friend Jesse, who used to play bass in the band, because he makes our videos, and it, so far for me, it's been really fun to just let him do it, you know, just say, hey, man, you take your part, and you do your thing how you want it to look, and I'll accept that, and so far that's worked out fine. Don't take much of it, just kind of do it. Show up. Showing up is 70% of life, right? It's all right. It's cool. I mean, it helps a lot, you know, to get the music out, so it's kind of like a game I play along with, and I don't mind. Sometimes I think about it, and it just... It worries me sometimes because it's just like, it burns your brain out or something. It makes you feel weird. But it's cool. It doesn't bother me that much. I like it. It's funny. Yeah, it's pretty funny, too. That's just a joke. I think it's just a thing that people like to have fun writing about. They write what they want to make themselves laugh, you know? And they make me laugh, too. I wouldn't have picked it as a single for so certainly, because I didn't see a real reason to do that song again. But I think they knew what they were doing, and I don't really like look at things like that too closely, you know, in the mouth, like, because it got a lot of exposure for the band, and probably, no doubt, a couple more people heard our own songs, and so there's nothing wrong with it, you know. It's something of a compromise, but it's cool. It's not so bad. I'd like to be a fisherman or a surfer, beach bum kind of person, or I'd like to be a reader, I'd like to be an announcer, a reader, I'd like to read aloud a lot and stuff like that. So I'd be out there fishing and surfing occasionally and reading aloud to myself on the boat.
I met a boy called Frank Mills on September 12th right here in front of the Waverly. But unfortunately, I lost his address. He was last seen with his friend, a drummer he resembles George Harrison of the Beatles. But he wears his hair tied in a small bow at the back. I love him, but it embarrasses me to walk down the street with him. He lives in Brooklyn somewhere, and he wears his white crash helmet. He has golden chains on his leather jacket, and on the back are written the names Mary and Mom and Hey. I would gratefully appreciate it if you see him, tell him I'm in the park with my girlfriend, and please tell him Angela and I don't want the $2 back, just him. startle us. It's enough to startle us.
Lemonheads right there, a little bit of a cover of Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel's track, Ms. Robinson, from, what was the movie with, oh God, are we going to do this now? The Graduate, that's right, it came out in the 60s. They're covering the song, and they were asked to do that, as you heard in the interview, for the remake of the movie, or reissue of the movie, that sort of thing. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Steel City Music. Your host, Gunner, here, heard on the Hawk every Friday from 12 p.m. till 7 p.m. And if you miss the episode, you can always hit up the website, 1015thehawk.mohawkcollege.ca, and there's an archive section there. And if you miss any of the shows and you want to find out more about the radio station, just go to the link, and there you go. And if you wanted to put together a radio show, you are more than welcome to. Just hit up the link and contact our station manager, Maria. All the details are there. Maria Cassidy is her name. And she's our, I call her the station manager and the new guru. Others have all these terms like radio technologist. I'm like, wow, that's pretty heavy title. But I guess that's what it is. Anyway, that has nothing to do with anything that I'm doing here. I'm just kind of, you know, promoting the radio station in the middle of this. But anyway, go do it. If you want to put a show together and it's something you think that, that people should hear, do it, because it really is a really good feel-good process. Now, finishing out this hour, we're going to get into some beach slang. A band that I like to, it's like my fallback band when I want to pick up my mood, that sort of thing. And it was put together by James Alex in the band. I did some reading, though, most recent reading, that, you know, that he had to, like, apologize for being a little too brutal to his manager and what the band's needs were. And the manager just like, I never want to work with this guy again. It's just like, it's funny, though, when you just from my background earlier on in life and dealing with musicians and music industry people. Back in the day when I was doing it, it was just like, yeah, everyone yelled at everybody. It was not functional at all. So I think it's kind of cool that the manager stood up to them and said, hey, knock this off. I don't need to be put through this. So everyone needs to be treated with respect. But then again, who are we to know what goes on inside of other people's lives? And I don't really want to know that much. I do enjoy the music, though. So you're going to hear an interview that was done by Moshcam, I think back in 2017 with James, just talking about the writing process of what the band goes through, from everything from like when you can hear a certain chord that gets played in a rehearsal to just some generalities of how they put their music together. So I got that coming up as well. With a couple tracks from their full album, you know, A Loud Bash of Teenage Feelings. So, Punks in a Disco Bar will be in the set. It's one of my favorite tracks. If you want to contact me for an interview to promote your charity or to promote your event, yes, I know we are still doing the COVID pandemic lockdown, but I'm always here to help out people when it comes to music, art, charities, that kind of thing. Hit me up at steelcitymusic.ca. There's a contact form there. And just send me the details, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Also, give us a follow on Instagram, SCMGram on Instagram. I'm always reposting what other people are doing musically, art, the whole nine yards. And on Twitter. Yeah, I'm on the Twitter. Still on the Twitter. I got about three or four handles on the go. I've had so many accounts over the years for different things that I just kept them. So Steel City Music account, of course. There's also Gunner 101. I've had that was like my first, like 17,000 followers on it. I don't even know who you people are, but that's cool. Also, Go Gunner Smith is another account as well. And of course, you know, you can find The Hawk as well on Twitter. And send me messages. Give us all a follow. Let us know what you're doing and what your needs are and all the other fun stuff. So there you go. A little bit of, I guess, housekeeping for this hour. I don't feel right unless I do a little promotion for everybody. So yada, yada, yiddy, there you go. All right, so I guess we should just get right to it. Closing up this hour, we're going to start things off with a Moshcam interview with Beach Slang and some cool music. And please, please, please enjoy.
Hey, this is James Alex from Beach Slang, and you're watching Moshcam. I sort of tapped into that, like, sort of troubadour poet sort of thing, you know, and that felt kind of cool to me to sort of, like, I don't know, and then meet, like, new people and be in, like, new places all the time just felt really reinforcing. So the guys would be out seeing, like, Swiss Alps and kind of cool things like that, and it's like, hey, take care of James, and then I'll be stuck wherever I have a little place to write. But there's something about that. I'm a pretty isolating, I don't know, Bukowski said isolation is a gift, you know? And, like, I think I've always subscribed to that to a little bit. Certainly when I write. But then there's that really great moment when it's, like, guys, I wrote this thing and I'm really excited about it. And then we all get in a room and then it feels like beach slang, you know? It was kind of this weirdo thing. I was living on the West Coast for a little bit. And it was like, I thought I always wanted to live there, West Coast of the States. And it just didn't kind of work out. And it just kind of felt like this, I don't know, when you dream up this like really perfect imaginary place in your head and then that sort of falls short, you're left figuring out what happened, you know? So sort of the beginnings of that song were about that. And then, I don't know, I've like defined the songs that I've written on our first album as like, they're 2-minute novels about me and my friends and they matter a whole lot to me, you know? And that's what that is, right? So I start in this place where I just felt completely disconnected from what I thought was going to be heaven, right? And then I start thinking of the people who kind of pulled me up out of the gutter, sort of how we found each other and we sort of made a pretty cool life together. And so the back half gets hopeful, you know. It's pretty true to the beginning because like the demos I'll deliver are pretty sussed. Like they'll have like the little dingers and the little finger drums and the harmonies and stuff. So it's just like, I'm just a real meticulous creature, I suppose, in that way. But with that said, it's not like where it's like some ironclad door closed when we get into the studio, because I want life to be in these things. And if somebody like tries a thing or does a thing or has a part, and I'll just be like, oh man, that's perfect, you know? And then it's like, typically the really sweet thing about that, it's why I never wanted like solo stuff to me. It's just always been a weird trip. Like I love being in a band because it's like, then someone does a thing like that and all of a sudden it just triggers a whole new thought process. Like even if somebody just ranks a chord, it's like typically like, no, inside of that mistake was something really keeper and something really beautiful. And then it's like, you write like a whole bridge around it, but you would have never heard that by yourself, you know? Philadelphia has this like great sort of combination of like romance and grit to it. You know, it has this like really beautiful culture and history and all that stuff. And then it's got that really sort of seedy, grimy sort of toughness to it. And somewhere in that mash, you know, delivers this sort of, I think the mentality of bands there, like blue collar, hardworking, sweated out in the basement, like kind of no smoke and mirrors, no manufactured sort of sound. It's just honest rock and roll, you know? I got this patch, it says Teenage Feelings, from my friend Devin in Chicago once, and I had it sitting on my desk for a good bit, and then I would just take it with me on tour, right? And it's just that Teenage Feelings thing, it was just stuck in my head. And I got interviewed once, and somebody was like, if you had to describe beach slang in a line, you know, what would you say? And I was like, you sound like, and I was like, oh, loud bash of Teenage Feelings, you know? It just sort of like rolled off the tongue. I mean, all like when I write songs for this band, all I really try to do is like pretend I'm scoring like a John Hughes film in the 80s, you know? I'm just trying to write these like these coming of age sort of tales, you know? And I just think like that's what it'll forever be to me, you know? That sort of youthful sort of charge, man. Because it's just like, you know, whether you're 15 or like 75, right? You're still trying to figure out like, what the fuck am I doing? You know what I mean? Am I doing it right? Did I do it all the way? Like, I don't know. We sort of culturally sort of say at this point you need to have it all figured out or this thing. And I guess what I'm trying to say is like you have permission to keep searching, you know, sort of forever. Play it loud, play it fast. Play me something that will always last. Die.
nation waits to bleed. For broken kids no one needs. Style.
brother, 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 brother. Destroy you.
You're listening to Steel City Music.
Hamilton's Alternative, 101.5, The Hawk FM.
You're listening to Steel City Music.
Hey, folks, thanks for listening to Steel City Music. I'm your host, Gunnar. This next interview you're going to hear is from a band called Junior Achiever. They came out in the early parts of 2000, generated by a really dear friend of mine, Gene Champagne. He was one of the original members of the Killjoys. They signed to Warner Records back in the day in Canada, and they wanted Junos, and they're just a fantastic band. And of course, with me, I've known Gene for over 30 years, and I was the tour manager of the band. And when that shut down, he started up a bus company, but also started up a band because he always still wanted to play. There was always that thing with him. So he contacted a good friend, Dave Fritz. They were playing, they played together, that sort of thing, pushing one another to be better as musicians, the whole nine yards. And from there, they went on to meet up with Jeremy Knowles and Stephen Scott as well. Now, this is an interview, I think, with that I wanted to do because these guys are dear friends of Gene. And Gene is suffering from COVID. He's in a hospital. He's in a ventilator. And for about a week and a half, almost 2 weeks, a lot of us have been exchanging updates, that sort of thing. And I said, you know, it'd be really nice if we could just get the real backstory on Junior Achiever, because they were a great band and what it meant to them to be a part of that band and to do that thing back in the 2000s. So Dave Fritz was kind enough to get the guys together because they're all across this country. One's in Ottawa, and Jeremy Knowles is a tour manager for bands. So I don't quite know where he's living right now. I know he's not touring too much because of the stupid COVID thing. But and Dave Fritzy lives in Toronto. So we set up a Zoom meeting. We had a long, long chat. We had some laughs. We shared some experiences. And I got the backstory on the album, the recording of All the Little Letdowns, and all the fun things. So guys, thank you so much for doing this. The music still sounds great to me, and I love the chat.
Hey, folks, you're listening to Steel City Music. Your host, Gunner, here, heard on the Hawk every Friday from 12 p.m. till 7 p.m. Now, this is a special hour that I'm having right now because I have some old friends that I only get to see every other year. And we're brought together now because of a dear friend of ours, Gene Champagne, who we've all seems like we've known since we were children, even though maybe we haven't. He's a good friend of ours, and he's a member of Junior Achiever, the Killjoys, Teenage Head, Monday Nuns. He had all these musical projects. Our dear friend has ended up in the hospital due to severe pneumonia and COVID. He's only 52 years of age. The variant of COVID has started to hit younger generations, and our buddy is one of them. So we're not hanging out just to talk. We're not like here talking just to feel sorry for ourselves. We're here to talk about Junior Achiever, how he started it with the band, that sort of thing in a backgrounder, and just to share some stories, because one, we feel that some of these stories about Junior Achiever are pretty funny and people should know. And two, we also know that